Thank you, everyone. Welcome to the Climate Justice Now press conference. Here we have today a number of spokespersons from the network Climate Justice Now. They all represent different organizations and social movements from all over the world. We are here now to hear from them on their analysis on the deadly consequences of the failed COP process. Before we begin, I'd just like to inform you all that one of our speakers was escorted out of the building, and we will be reading a statement from him after. So we'd like to begin with Pablo Solon, who was the former lead negotiator for the plurinational state of Bolivia and co-coordinator of the World People's Summit on Climate Change and Mother Earth Rights held in Bolivia in 2010. Pablo?
Good afternoon. A few moments ago, we found out the decisions that they have been cooking behind the scenes. In Durban, they won't approve a second period of commitments for the Kyoto Protocol. This will happen at the end of next year in COP18. In Durban, they will only take note of the draft amendments and the intention of rich countries to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The Kyoto Protocol will lose its heart. The promise of reductions by rich countries will be incredibly low until 2020 and will lead to a temperature increase of more than 4 degrees Celsius. The Kyoto Protocol will turn into a zombie without a global figure for reduction of emissions by industrialized countries and will carry on walking until 2020 just so that carbon markets don't disappear. In 2020, it will enter into effect in a new legal framework applicable to all. By all, they mean diluting the difference between developed and developing countries, between countries responsible for climate change and those who are victims. The US is the great winner. They managed to eliminate any nation to a binding agreement. That means the new legal framework will be an empty gesture without any effect. This will become known as the lost decade of the fight against climate change. Genocide and ecocide will reach proportions that we have not yet seen. The great scale by the rich has turned into the great swim. Thank you.
Thank you, Pablo. And next we have Ludin Atbil from the Philippines, who is the coordinator of Jubilee South Asia Pacific, and they have been mobilizing against the corporate takeover of the Global Climate Fund. Ludin?
We have been saying that hundreds of billions of dollars are needed every year in order to enable the peoples of the South to deal with the impacts of climate change. And it is clearly the responsibility and obligation of Annex I countries to provide this finance. But what we have been witnessing, not only in Durban, but also in the last two COPs, is consistent with what is happening in the talks on the KP and the mitigations, and that is a complete evasion or refusal to fulfill the obligations and responsibilities of Annex I countries to provide this finance. The Durban COP is expected to approve the design of the Green Climate Fund, but the outcome from the transitional committee and the proposal on the table is a proposal that we find very difficult to accept, principally because they are proposing a private sector facility. And this is something outrageous because the fund is supposed to be for developing countries, for the good of the peoples of developing countries. What the Annex I countries are basically doing is wanting a fund that is completely based on their terms and that will operate primarily to fulfill what they see as necessary, and that is to provide access to the private sector to these funds because they believe the private sector is the one that should be financing climate change. What this means, of course, is more markets, more profits from the suffering of people, and climate finance that will not be based on the priorities or the policies of developing countries. There is now, in the process of the negotiations, valiant efforts on the part of some developing countries to prevent this and to put, to curtail what is already on the table as a proposal. And we support these efforts. One specific effort now going on is to prevent the GCF from the Secretariat from being given to the JEF, which is actually basically the World Bank. So we would like to oppose and strongly express our opposition to this proposal.
Thank you, Libby. And next we have Sylvia Ribeiro from Mexico, who is with the ETC group, and she has been working with peasant and agricultural movements to oppose risky new technologies, geoengineering, and the use of market mechanisms in agriculture and forests. Sylvia?
Thank you. Yeah, in this context that we are hearing here, we won't have any concrete targets or reductions. We won't have any kinds of commitments, but other things have been advancing. For instance, the use of carbon, the use of soils and agriculture as objects in carbon markets. This will be devastating for peasants and all the small food providers that produce 70% of the food that is consumed in the world. Because what we don't need is that the companies, the financial speculators that has shown so clearly that they have failed, they cannot even administrate their own house, and they will come into carbon markets to tell the farmers that has been producing the food for most of the planet for 10,000 years, how to administrate their own agriculture, their own soil. FAO, that is here claiming that so-called climate smart agriculture will advance the interest of farmers, is totally wrong. And as La Via Campesina, the world largest small farmers organization, has shown this week, we need to oppose these kinds of development, the inclusion of agriculture and soil in carbon markets, and also defend the right of peasants and listen to completely other ways of cool the planet as they are already doing. Also, another development inside the negotiations, which is the technology transfer, which is being presented as part of a possible outcome from here as a victory, it's very important to note that the big emitters like United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, they have been all the time opposing any mention to the patents of the technologies. So they are bracketing every mention to intellectual property right on technologies, and at the same time, they are also blocking any kind of social, cultural, or economic evaluation so the developing world really can know which technologies we are speaking about. So what is being negotiated under the technology committee and network that is being discussed here is a marketing arm for subsidizing transnational corporations without questioning their patents and which kind of technologies that they want to dump on the third world.
Thank you. Thank you, Sylvia. And now we have Amina Maxi from the US. She is a member of the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, which is an alliance of people of color, grassroots communities in the US fighting for climate justice. Amina?
Our communities are affected by climate change. I'm from one of the most heavily polluted cities in the United States, Detroit, Michigan. We have the third most polluted zip code in the United States, and my family and community members suffer from respiratory diseases, cancers, and as well as asthmas, high rates of asthma due to the pollution that the United States puts out. I'm here to demand, as a citizen of the United States, but as a person from an environmental justice community, that the U.S. reduce their pollution to the world, and in addition, to stand in solidarity with our indigenous communities and peoples of color from around the world who are all affected by the United States. Offsets, including RED and other offsets like that pushed forward by the United States, are being felt in my community. The Marathon Oil Refinery, which is in my city of Detroit, Michigan, is being expanded to process tar sands that could potentially come from Canada. So we are asking that the Obama reject, not reroute, the Keystone XL pipeline, and we're here to support a moratorium on RED. We're also again here to demand that the United States take action, because it is our communities that suffer, it's our communities that die. My community dies from asthma at twice the national rate. And so I'm here because my family's dying, and this is something that's not just affecting the world, but it's affecting us here in the States, and that needs to be heard, and the U.S. needs to listen. So, thank you.
Thank you, Amina. And now we have Nimo Bassi from Nigeria, who is an environmental activist and poet. He is the chair of Friends of the Earth International and has just recently published a book called To Cook a Continent, which is about the destructive extraction and climate impacts in Africa. Nimo.
Thank you very much. I believe that the real test of this COP is whether at the end of the day, the delegates and politicians who pass a death sentence on Africa. The real test would be whether these delegates would show that they have blood flowing in their veins, or if they care about the starving children, the devastation across the continent, and across more island states and other vulnerable places in the world. We need to know if the delegates will continue to pretend that there's no problem in the world, that they can continue with business as usual, whether they're going to yield to arm twisting just because a few dollars are being hoisted about in the corridors. We want to send a clear message to delegates that finding a solution to global warming does not require rocket science. The peoples of this world met last year in April in Cochabamba and came away with a very clear, simple strategic document, the People's Agreement. The blueprint to fighting global warming is right in that document. And we find that leaders will meet, spend months, spend years, another one, 10 more years, 20 more years of inaction. We are demanding and call upon the G77, the group, all the African group, the ALBA, the LOCs, to say clearly that enough is enough of this nonsense. We can't afford to pretend that nothing is going on while the world is burning. Africa must not be killed. We're asking that everyone in the halls, all those in the secret rooms, should know that what they're doing, the delays, constitute nothing short of crime. And this cannot be tolerated.
Thank you. Before I open the floor for questions, I'd just like to inform everyone here that there is a vigil starting tonight at the Speaker's Corner. And it will go on all night, and there will be. And now we have actually the statement from Desmond Dessa, who was originally a speaker for this panel, but he's been escorted out of this building and debadged. So I'm just going to read his statement. I think it's important to note that the UN COP is failing. The action we've taken today is to highlight that the EU, the US, Canada, and Japan are the biggest polluters who continue to hold the rest of the world for ransom because they are not willing to commit to binding emissions reduction targets and to provide the necessary funding to those who are being affected the most and yet are the least responsible for the crisis facing their populations. Our statement today by our action, which resulted in the removal of our badges, is something we've done to express our concerns that the people and the planet need urgent action. The climate crisis demands urgent response. We cannot wait for 2020, as that will result in millions being displaced or dying in poverty due to extreme climatic conditions. We urge the South African government to stand with the rest of Africa and the small island states. So I'd like to open the floor now for questions. We have a bit more information later about the vigil and another message from one of the other Climate Justice Now activists who was also removed from the building. So yes, so could you please raise your hand if you'd like to ask a question? Yes, please.
I have a question for all of you. Have you explained that none of the groups, African groups, didn't slam the door during the negotiation?
Yes, other questions? Yes, please, the gentleman in back.
Sorry, John Bedell from The Guardian. Could any of you comment, please, on the Durban text, which Paolo people have seen, which is very much the EU plan? Can you give us an immediate reaction to that? obviously not many of us have seen it, but it would be very good to know what this might mean if it were adopted by the to pass this version on tonight.
Yes, thank you. Other questions, please? Yes, please.
This is Shahidullah from Bangladesh. My question is to the American participants. We know that the climate negotiations is not still fruitful. As you know, that the major countries are not interested. Like the United States, their government are like pushing back Paris obligations. So it takes the consensus from the root level, from the people's mind. Do you, are you really interested to go back to your country and organize your local people that the consensus should come from the rural community, from the root level? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Let us answer. Let us answer. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, so, yes, please, go ahead.
Yes, well, we made an explanation in relation to the two draft decisions. One has three pages, the other one has one page. One has to do with the mandate for the new legal framework, and the other one has to do with the Kyoto Protocol. What it says, this two decision, is in first place that there won't be an amendment to the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol here in Durban. That will be postponed until 2012, COP18. And even worse, it says that here we are only going to take note of their intentions when it comes to emission reductions and the draft amendments. And it also says that the ad hoc working group on KP is going to finish its work here in Durban. So who's going to be in charge of this process of the Kyoto Protocol if there isn't going to be another working group on KP? It's going to be the SBI, the subsidiary body of the convention. So this is what one of the decisions says. And the other one establishes that it gives a mandate so that there will be a new ad hoc working group that will begin its work by next year, December, in COP18, for what they call a new legal framework applicable to all. I would say that this is not what the EU was asking for. This is the victory of the US, because you have a legal framework applicable to all. It doesn't say binding. And we're going to have a second commitment period of the KP that is an empty KP. As I said it at the beginning, the EU is accepting that they will convert the Kyoto Protocol into a zombie that will exist only with the purpose to preserve carbon markets until 2020 and definitively disappear in 2020 when this new legal framework comes into force, but let's repeat, it will not be binding. So we are going from bad to even worse.
Thank you.
Well, the question about the African group, if they have slammed the door in negotiations, if that means if the African group is blocking negotiations, I would say as far as we know, that's not the case. And that is not really very conceivable, except if the talks to be going in such a direction that it simply means a death sentence on Africa, it means that Africa is going to be incinerated. If from the analysis we just heard from Pablo, that we're going to have an empty KP, we have all the nice words, all the nice labels without anything in them, then I would personally vote for the African group to turn their back on that kind of process. But we cannot say.
I'll address the question about getting to the people in the United States and whether they're ready. Like I mentioned, the communities in the United States that are affected are ready and have already been pushing the government as far as needing to directly reduce their emissions because we're the ones directly suffering. As far as a lot, we need to target our government, but in addition to our government, we all know and we've learned through these negotiations that the main people we need to target are also the corporations. So in our community, we are targeting the government, but also there's through these Occupy movements and through these basically targeting the 1%, we're realizing that they are really the problem. And so from my perspective as a youth in the United States and as a black woman, the people that I need to talk to are not my peers. They are the middle class, the comfortable, the privileged, you know, the white people who live in the United States and feel no obligation or feel no responsibility to what's happening. So you're right, and we're ready to organize. And of course, we need the pressure from the rest of the world. And I know that my country is not doing enough. It's not doing enough for my people. And I know it's not doing enough for the world. So we're definitely ready, and we're pushing. So.
And also in connection to this, Indaba paper, the one that is later now, as Pablo Senon explained, is not only calling for an enforcement in 2020, it's calling for a start to develop something in 2020. So in reality, it's just putting everything in a vacuum, but rescuing carbon markets. So there is another paper that has been out today also saying that even if there is not a second period of the Kyoto Protocol, the clean development mechanism will survive, and all the market mechanism. And they are even increasing, as I explained, they went for forest last year through the very, very damaging red program, and now they want to include soils and agriculture to take also all the other issues related to small producers. And in reality, this is not only one more step. This is about that. Today, the largest amount of emissions comes from industrial agriculture. If we cut through and measure deforestation, the paper that is used in packaging and transports and all, the industrial food system is the major emitter. So this is not being said here. Instead, they say, oh, we can use this for carbon markets. We can use the soils of small farmers for carbon markets. And this is more dangerous because this means that the emitters will continue, the food in the industrial food system will continue, but the speculators will go over to the territories of people living in the forest and small farmers. So this is why we are really opposing any inclusion of agriculture and soils, and also take out forests and others from carbon markets.
I think it's just important to add that in addition to preserving carbon markets, this approach is going to pave the way for lower ambition based on voluntary pledges. That's what's going to happen.
So I'd just like to read a statement from Ann Peterman of Global Justice Ecology Project, who was actually physically carried out on the building earlier this afternoon. So, and she's now at the speaker's corner. The action I took today because I believe this process is corrupt. This process is bankrupt, and this process is controlled by the 1%. If meaningful action on climate change is to happen, it will need to happen from the bottom up. The action I took today was to remind us all of the power of taking action into our own hands. With the failure of states to provide human leadership and the corporate capture of the United Nations process, direct action by the 99% is the only avenue we have left. So I believe we have maybe time for one last question, and then we will have to
continue out.
We can continue outside, and also there is a vigil. Again, there is a vigil happening at the speaker's corner, which is right outside the ICC, and we received information that there will be people who were evicted from their villages and communities when they were cleaning the city of Durban for the COP. They will be coming to join the vigil at the speaker's corner. So, yes, one last question, please. Yes.
Maybe because people are so exasperated and don't know what anymore to do. Do you have any suggestion? I think Anne was calling for, I don't know, civil disobedience or whatever. I'd like to have suggestions from the panel about what to do then, since this process doesn't seem to be leading us anywhere.
Well, as Nimo mentioned, we have the Cochabamba People's Agreement. This was 35,000 people from 115 countries. And it's a very considerable amount of knowledge and proposals there. It's online. So I suggest everyone, present delegates, to look at that. This is definitely one of our main global references from the climate justice movement.
I think also that from the speaker's corner, where we all, most of us are going after this, and the conversations we're going to have thereafter, we're going to really critically examine this flop COP and see what next is to be done.
I'd just like to add that I think the most important thing we should do is to go back to our countries and build our movement stronger and wider and more militant, because unless the pressure is coming from everywhere, we can't just be doing our pressure work during COPs. We should be doing it throughout the year, addressing our governments, addressing the governments of the rich countries, and that the global justice movement should not just be about mobilizations during the COP sessions.
As former chief negotiator for Bolivia, I want to call to my brother delegates from different countries that are here. They know what is really happening. This time, we cannot let pass these two decisions. If we allow that, we are going to burn the planet and cook Africa. So I think it's the time that other delegates, other delegations, other countries take the role and stop and block these two decisions. Thank you.
Amina?
I would say to also support the moratorium on rent, because as we know, it infringes on indigenous rights, but also affects people of color, low-income communities, where those offsets will be felt. And then also, I plan to go back and organize in my community, as I have been, with the Zero Waste Detroit Coalition against our local waste to energy incinerator. So yes, I'm a local activist, but I'm here at this level to share all of what's happening in my community, but also continue to organize against these false solutions.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your presence here at our press conference. All the panelists are available for interview outside the room. Thank you.